WC 15859, Justin Walcott versus Administrative Director of the Courts, arguing for the petitioner, Earl A. Partington, arguing for the respondent, Robert T. Nakatsuji, Deputy Solicitor General, argument on the merits.
All right, good morning, Mr. Partington, Mr. Nakatsuji, both ready to proceed today?
Yes, sir.
All right, you will reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, Mr. Partington, and a 5 minute warning for you.
Thank you. May it please the court. This is a fairly simple issue, but it's a very important issue, particularly because a certain amount of these administrative revocation hearings are done pro se. And our concern in this case that the document in question, which is called the problem driver pointer system, I'm not sure what pointer means there, but this particular document has no title on it. It has no legend or key. And in this particular case, Mr. Walcott and his attorney were not told what this document was until the hearing officer's decision, which is after any opportunity to object to the document. Our position,
is that a normal course where the examiner is going to rely on something that hasn't been provided to counsel? I mean,
well, it was provided in discovery, but there's no explanation. The document's in code. And our position is that if you want to present a document in code, you're going to have to provide a legend, certainly for pro se people who appear, so they can understand how to read it.
Mr. Partington, the document seems to be just a result of a search. Doesn't actually, at the top of it actually says search, I think.
Well, it's apparently something that was taken offline. That's correct, but there is no title to it. No explanation of the code, no explanation on how to read it.
What do you think what do you think they should have done in order to authenticate it?
Well, this form is fairly new. Prior to this, there was a form that had a title on it, explained what it was, and anyone reading it could understand what it was. And for some reason, in the last 2 or 3 years, they've switched to this form. And I don't understand why they switched. The previous form was easy to understand. Anyone could read it and see what it was. Certainly, if you're going to provide something in code, you should provide a key or legend.
Could I ask for a little clarification on Justice Nakayama's question, Mr. Partington, about how we would interpret the necessary foundation to be laid? McGrail versus administrative director is a case that involved the issue about whether statements should be sworn statements of officers that provided a foundation. But I understand you to say you're not going that far in this case, so could you clarify a bit more what you would be looking for?
Certainly. Our position is that you don't need to have a Hawaii Rules of Evidence Foundation. But you need some foundation to explain what is this document and how do you read it.
So do you think what the hearing officer Zane filed subsequent, was that enough? And is explanation that the district court judge was looking at?
Well, we think that you need, when the discovery is provided in this case before the hearing and you decide if you want the hearing, our position is the discovery should include a legend or key explaining what this means, so that a pro se defendant or even a lawyer can understand exactly what all the entries on that form mean.
So in addition to what the hearing officer put in post-hearing, there also should be an explanation as to how to read this particular listing?
Well, that's correct, because if you find out post-hearing, you have no opportunity to do anything about it. This problem arises for a number of years. I've litigated unsuccessfully, I might add, with this court, the view that the hearing officers should only take into evidence the documents provided for in the statute. The practice has developed that they take in the entire file, and often there is no explanation of why they're taking in documents or what those documents are. This court has upheld previously the right of the hearing officer to take in the entire file. I would hope this court would begin now to limit that, so that the hearing officer would be required to say, I'm taking in document X, which is, and explain what it is, so that we know at these hearings, rather than saying, I'm satisfied and I'm taking in the entire file. Because I don't think this is terribly helpful to the court, or to the person, the driver, appearing before it, because often you don't know why they're taking in a particular document. And the statutory requirements are very clear. You take in the sworn statements and certain documents. And if the administrative driver's license revocation office was required to have the hearing officer state why each document was coming in, and it was limited to the documents in the statute, I think this would be far more efficient and would probably avoid appeals to the ICA and to this court.
So are you saying that the documents, although they may be difficult to read, were provided in discovery?
Oh, yes, they're provided in discovery, but there's no explanation provided in discovery.
Okay. So, and I understand that the attorney, that wasn't you at that point in time, right, at the hearing?
Yes.
It was you?
No,
it was somebody else.
It was not. It was Mr. McPherson.
Right. Mr. McPherson said he was unaware that there were two from Oregon was his problem.
Well, that's because he had a problem reading the form. I've sort of become an expert on reading the form now because of this case. But if you look at it initially and you have no experience, you will see it's all in code. And unless you know that code, you have no idea what it says. That, to me, is the problem. And when the hearing officer waits till after the hearing to identify it in the hearing officer's decision, it's too late to do anything about it. And that's the essence of our complaint.
So, I'm sorry, Chief Justice?
No, but what about authentication of the document? Does it need to be something or some kind of indication that what it is and what it and that it is what it purports to be? Or is that a separate, or is your argument focused solely on the explanation of what the claim is?
No, it's both. Mr. McPherson said he felt that it should have a sworn statement to authenticate it, but to me, authentication can come in many different ways. Certainly, if we knew it came from a particular website and that was a government website, that would probably be adequate authentication. But the problem is that people go into the hearing and have no idea where this document came from, and the hearing officer made no effort to identify it or the source of the document. She just took in the entire file and said that she was overruling any objection, so that we were in a situation of not knowing where this document came from. And that, I think, is the gist of our argument. Whether it's a sworn statement or some other form of authentication, I don't think it matters, as long as there's something to indicate the source of the document and its authenticity.
In other words, that it came from this particular database, for example.
That's correct, and that's a government database.
So it could even be a caption from the database or something typed on the top of the document that would say, print out from this.
That's correct. The old form that they used had that, and was very easy to read. Anyone could read it and understand it. And I've never quite understood why the state has switched over to this particular form, which is in code.
What about the argument by the director that the arguments you're raising today weren't preserved? Mr. McPherson simply said it has to be a sworn statement. That's a very direct objection.
Well, I think he was saying there has to be some form of authentication. I mean, I think perhaps Mr. McPherson could be more articulate, but in the brief I pointed out that that's, if you read it, you have to understand that's what he's asking for. How do we know this document is authentic? And that's a real problem when you have an untitled document from an unknown source. Now, I noticed that in the state's brief on this, they said it came from a particular website. This is the first time we ever heard about that. And obviously, it's a little late to hear about it when we're on appeal.
This is an interesting section of the statute, Mr. Partington, that's 291E36B4, that refers to a listing of all alcohol and drug enforcement contacts involving the respondent. But I understand your position to be that, in your view, that could constitute admissible evidence as long as it's clear amongst the parties and the hearing examiner what the nature of the contacts are?
Well, I think you're going to the crux of the problem. The state's position is if it's in the file, it comes in. And our position is that how do we know it's properly in the file?
I agree
the statute provides for that, but I think that there has to be some level of authentication, even if it's minimal, particularly if someone can't read that form, how can they contest it? And when you're dealing with pro se's, this is, to me, a very significant issue. I've had a number of cases over my career where people in criminal cases, not in adversarial cases, who have been had prior convictions listed only to discover it's by another person with the same name. So I think it's very important that any driver who appears on these is able to read this form so that he can challenge the prior convictions if they're not his.
Anything further?
No, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll hear from Mr. Nakasugi.
Good morning, Chief Justice Rechtenwald and Associate Justices of the Hawaii Supreme Court. May it please the Court. My name is Robert Nakatsuji, and I'm a Deputy Solicitor General in the Department of the Attorney General. I represent the respondent, the Administrative Director of the Courts, who has delegated responsibility for these kinds of cases to the Administrative Driver's License Revocation Office. Our position in this case is that there is no further foundation that's required. What is already in the record is sufficient to support admission of the document in question. We would ask the Court not to impose any additional foundation requirements on ADLRO proceedings. We would argue that it's inconsistent with the plain meaning of the statutes to require additional foundation. It's inconsistent with the purpose behind the ADLRO statutes, inconsistent with administrative law in general, and inconsistent with the past practice of ADLRO. And in the end, imposing additional foundational requirements on ADLRO proceedings will lead to more dangerous drivers on the streets.
What about Mr. Partington's argument about at least a way to interpret? I mean, according to the hearing officer Zane, there are four offenses here. And it's hard to figure out there are four offenses. And there are 11 pages. So Mr. Partington's saying at least give a legend or some sort of way to discern what the listing is saying.
Your Honor, if you look at the document, it speaks for itself. The offenses listed, the ones that he was that his revocation was based on, those offenses are listed as DUI alcohol/drug. The citation.
I'm sorry. What page are you referring to?
And I'm referring to page 7 of the administrative record. The administrative record is renumbered, so there's a large number 7 in black marker on the lower left-hand corner. Okay. If you notice, the offenses are listed.
Were the offenses listed?
Yes, Your Honor, they are.
It's
offense A21, DUI alcohol.
What? I'm sorry?
Oh, yeah. I see. Yes. Where the bracket is.
Okay. Yes.
And then below that, there's another offense. It says DWLICSUSP. That's driving while license suspended. There's another one that's the same, driving while license suspended. And then on the next page, page 8, there's another one, A20, DUI alcohol/drug. So the offenses are listed, and they very clearly are traffic offenses. Furthermore, these all have citation dates. So if you look for each one of these, it says CIT dash date. That's a citation date.
How is a pro se person supposed to know what this means?
Well, Your Honor, the pro se person can address this at the hearing. The hearing officer could go over all of this. The problem in this case was that the issue wasn't raised. It was the sworn statement issue that was raised at this particular hearing. Had Mr. Walcott's attorney at the hearing addressed all of this.
Didn't Mr. Walcott's attorney express surprise that there were two offenses from Oregon?
He did, Your Honor.
Well, isn't that enough to say, well, wait a second, where in this does this say about Oregon and that there's not enough substance to this record to inform him? And he's an attorney. He thought there were two offenses in Hawaii, and then he came to the hearing after receiving this and found out. And it seemed genuinely surprised. What, there are two more offenses in Oregon?
Well, Your Honor, I think Mr. Walcott's attorney simply had to look at the material that was provided to him.
So everyone would know that OR means Oregon. You know something? It did not occur to me. Not Not initially.
I thought it was own recognizance.
Well, Your Honor, the entry says state, and state, it shows OR. OR is the standard abbreviation for Oregon.
Well, how difficult would it be to have one page that could be attached to every printout that would just list all the abbreviations? It seems to me it would be simplistic. What's the difficulty? I know it's one thing you're trying to sustain the decision in this case, but what would be the problem? And you said you can ask the person beforehand, the hearing examiner. That assumes that the pro se person knows they can ask that kind of question. They're going to get that kind of explanation. Why can't they know that before they walk in? Why don't we give them enough information so that they know that?
Well, Your Honor, I think a lot of this has to do with the fact that there are very strict time limits involved in these kinds of cases. ADLRO proceedings, you have to do the first revocation within 8 days of the arrest. And so I think
that seems to argue the other way, that it's more important to give the information ahead of time because things are happening so quickly. In other words, again, having a page attached that never changes. You don't have to change. The one page could have all the abbreviations on it.
Your Honor, again, the ADLRO is working under time constraints, and they're trying to get these things done as quickly as possible. And the statutes do require that they have to make a decision within 8 days. And so I think, Your Honor, if you require more procedures.
Well, this isn't asking for a more procedure. It's asking for a page that has a, Mr. Pardon said, just tell us what everything means. That's not an additional procedure. It's just an additional safeguard. Because, you know, sure, in our copy, it's somebody has bracketed out convict-state and offense, colon. But it's in the middle of a whole list of things that I don't know a layperson would know non-CDL-class. How do they know that's not an offense? I mean, we know that it's a non-commercial driver's license, but how does a layperson know how to pick out on this list what everything means?
Your Honor, I recognize that the document could be clearer, but I would argue that if you read it, it is sufficient to establish that Mr. Walcott had two prior DUIs in Oregon.
Okay, let's move on to the second part, or at least for me, I'd like to ask a question. Mr. Partington's been arguing the authentication issue, okay? What we've just been talking about is whether it's clear, but the authentication, that, in other words, how would the attorney or the person who's having their license revoked know that this document is what it purports to be?
Well, Your Honor, first of all, the statute requires that this be a listing of the driver's prior alcohol enforcement.
I know, but if it's handwritten on a piece of paper, is that good? I mean, not everything is equivalent.
It just says listing. Could I sit at my word processor and come out with a list?
Well, Your Honor, the statute requires a listing, and it doesn't specify a source, but it appears to leave the source to ADLRO to exercise its discretion. And in doing so, though, Your Honor, I have to point out that ADLRO is not going to use an unreliable source. If they did, there would be errors, and those errors themselves could be challenged in the hearings.
Well, how do we know, I guess? How do we know it's not a reliable? The statute says a listing of all alcohol and drug enforcement. We have to rely on the ADLRO to, like you say, use a reliable source. You can't tell it's a reliable source. It just says driver's license status inquiry. That's all it says at the top of the page.
Yes, Your Honor, but there is other evidence in the record as to where the document came from.
But it came in after the hearing, so how does that give the
No, it didn't,
attorney?
Your Honor. There is other evidence in the record.
At the hearing?
Yes, and that one was provided to Mr. Walcott's attorney.
Which was what?
I'd like to point out the first page of the administrative record. It's got number one in the lower left-hand corner.
I'm sorry, what?
The first page of the administrative record. If you look in the lower left-hand corner, there's a one on it. Now, this is entitled at the top, Administrative Driver's License Revocation Office, for ADLRO office use only. So this document, it's a status sheet that describes the actions that the ADLRO staff took. It's basically a record of what they did. And if you look at the first entry on this document, it's dated August 20th, 2014.
Wait a minute. You're asking us to look. I don't have it in front of me. The first page of the administrative office record?
Yes, Your Honor. It's in the, it is in the record on appeal.
I'm sure it is. And this was provided to the attorney?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
The entire case file was.
So number one, you said, says ADL fees cleared.
I'm sorry?
Oh, that's a page number. But you wanted to, okay, you want us to look at the page that has one in the lower left-hand corner?
Yes, yes.
Okay, I understand.
Yes, that's the first page of the administrative record after the cover page. And the document, it's a status page. It records what the ADL staff did in regard to this case. There's an entry that says 8-20-14, August 20, 2014. There's the initials of an ADL staff person. And then there's a heading there that says action taken. Okay, and if you cross-reference action taken with the date, there's a notation that says PDPS. PDPS is the problem driver pointer system.
How is a defendant supposed to know that?
Your Honor.
Say that again. What is it?
It's the problem driver pointer system, Your Honor, which is the national database.
We didn't know that. I mean.
If we don't know that, how is a defendant supposed to know that?
Your Honor, this is a foundation for showing that this is coming from the problem driver pointer system. This is what the court is asking me of, how the parties can tell where this is coming from.
Well, that's what this is, on this page is coming from. How do we know that this printout came from that?
Well, Your Honor, if you look, the dates on all the printouts are 8-2014, and that is the date entry for this status sheet. Furthermore, there's other things in this entry. The entry also says JIMS/CNC. JIMS is the JIM system. That's the judiciary's own information system. That's where.
Well, is there? Are you saying that the ADLRO objects to creating a legend?
Your Honor, if the court orders it, ADLRO will.
Unless we order it, you won't do it.
I would argue that there's enough in here to tell where the document came from.
How is a layperson, even I wouldn't know what JIMS, whatever that is. How is a defendant supposed to know?
Your Honor, all of this could be addressed at the hearing. Again, it wasn't addressed in this particular case because Mr. Walcott's attorney didn't raise it.
When was this PD whatever system, when did you start using that?
You know, it's my understanding that the ADLRO started at least using PDPS printouts going back to the early 2000s. I don't have an exact date, but it's my understanding that they started using the printouts from the national database then.
I see.
And the practice for the past 20 years has been to admit the entire case file into evidence. And that is consistent with administrative law. Administrative cases do not apply criminal procedures.
Mm-hmm.
The purpose, in fact, of this particular proceeding is to establish a quick procedure to revoke licenses.
Well, sure, but the person has to understand what's happening. I mean, not at the, you know, there's a due process problem here when the person doesn't even know what the offense is, where, or at least where the offense has occurred. And
well, Your Honor, they do have notice that out-of-state violations will be considered. The statute says so. The documents that they sign when they're arrested, the implied consent forms, they all reference out-of-state convictions. So they know in advance that out-of-state convictions matter.
And you're saying that these documents are provided to the defendants when?
They are provided soon after the case is open. In fact, if you look on page one again, there's another reference to initial copies issued, and the date is 8-25-14. So on August 25th, 2014, the entire case file was provided to Mr. Walcott's attorney.
And when was when was the hearing?
The hearing was on June 8th, 2015.
I'm sorry?
June 8th, 2015 was the administrative hearing.
And you said it was provided when?
The copies of the documents were provided August 25th, 2014.
I see. So eight months before? I'm very confused now. You said that there has to be a ruling within 8 days?
Yes, Your Honor. The initial revocation decision based on a review of the paperwork.
Okay, and what was that initial decision? The initial decision was 10 years.
Yes. Then that's
just based on the paperwork.
Yes, that's what the initial decision was.
And so therefore, he requested a hearing.
Yes.
And then the hearing took place 8 months later.
It's a two-step process,
okay.
Your Honor. There's a review of the paperwork, And then if the driver is unsatisfied, they request a hearing.
Okay.
And then the hearing is set down the line.
Okay.
But your concern about the 8-day time frame, and correct me if I'm wrong, that's a paper review. So there's nothing that's correct, right? There's no, the offender.
Yes, the paper review occurs.
And so there's no problem, at least at that initial point, perhaps if they need to and there's a time crunch to rely on this kind of document. But if they're going to have a hearing, you're saying that they can't give any further explanation or any sort of authentication satisfaction because of the 8-day requirement that it's already been revoked on?
Your Honor, the initial revocation decision occurs within 8 days. If they don't request a hearing, then that ruling stands.
That's
and
correct.
So the hearing is actually a review of the initial decision. So it's important to get the initial decision right. And because of that, because they need to get that decision right within 8 days, that's why you need to be able to look at the national database.
But we're talking about the hearing that took place 8 months later. Is there a problem with providing a legend within the 8 months?
Your Honor, I think if the issue had been raised at the hearing officer
the
could
hearing,
have
it
addressed
was
all
raised.
Of this.
It was raised in two different ways. One, by the attorney being completely surprised, if we take the attorney, and there seems to be no reason not to, that he was surprised. And secondly, by the attorney arguing, look, they have to have some sort of sworn statement, which is, as Mr. Partington pointed out, a form of authentication.
Well, Your Honor, the sworn statement issue is a separate issue from the foundation issue. The sworn statement issue deals with the McGrail case. And there is really no question that a sworn statement is not required for this kind of evidence, even based on McGrail. But if you look at...
I think we get what he's getting at, which is, how do we even know what this is? I understand he posed it as a sworn statement, but it's a foundational objection, clearly.
Your Honor.
Let me ask you this. If the two Oregon, Mr. Partington and Mr. McPherson, admit to the two priors here, if the two Oregon priors go away, does the whole thing need to go back, or can this court say, okay, you get 5 years instead of 10 years?
Well, Your Honor, without the two Oregon convictions, the revocation goes from 10 years down to 4 years.
Okay.
And actually, this case is actually pretty old, so Mr. Walcott could get his license back right away. The thing is, though, Mr. Walcott, if you set aside for the moment the foundational issue, he's been driving drunk 5 times in the last 10 years, and you know, if you reduce that.
Wait a second. We only have evidence of, oh, that's right, 5 times.
Yes, the two Hawaii violations,
no, we're
the two
well
Oregon
aware of that.
And the present violation.
So it would
this
seem
is a guy,
even more incumbent on the state to try to get this right if this guy is a habitual drunk driver.
Yes, Your Honor. But again,
why not have a form that's a little more explanatory? Again, not getting too far out of the record, apparently. There used to be a form that had more explanation and had caption. Why wouldn't that be a minimal requirement of due process?
Your Honor, if the court wanted to impose requirements, it certainly could. And one way they could do it is by requiring a DLRO to put more in the file. That's certainly possible. The hearing officer could put something in the file, or the ADLRO staff could.
But the file is something that's just admitted into evidence at the time of the hearing. So,
yes, Your Honor.
When someone requests a hearing, is anything sent back to the defendant after the request for hearing? Is there something like, here's your hearing date, notice of hearing date, or something like that? Like when somebody requests a hearing, how do they find out when the hearing is?
Well, they are notified about the
how.
The hearing
how?
Date. I believe they're sent.
Is there like a paper that is mailed to them at that time?
I believe there is, Your Honor. I just can't find it at the moment.
Okay. So if there's a paper that's mailed to them at that time, why couldn't you just provide a legend along with the paper?
Well, Your Honor. All of these documents are provided upon request. When the driver's lawyer makes a request, the entire case file is provided to them. So if the court were to require something to be put in the file,
counsel,
that would be provided at that time.
Okay.
Counsel, we're not going to require. That's not our responsibility. Our responsibility is to determine whether or not there was a fair procedure. And as a result, if we find that it wasn't, then the ADLRO can approach it and fix it the way they want to. But we're not going to precisely say that they have to do it one way, or they have to do it this way, or they have to comply with authentication. In fact, it would have been nice 4 or 5 years ago when this issue first came up, somebody would have said, that was representing the government, said, hey, you know, there's actually a viable argument here. Why don't we make sure we don't get more of these and make some changes so we don't get further appeals on this issue?
Yes, Your Honor, I understand that. But I would ask the court, if the court's going to require additional procedures, to keep in mind that the procedures have to be procedures that ADLRO can satisfy given the time constraints.
Could I, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Nakazuki, but you were describing the procedures that I think you were hoping would not be too onerous. And
yes,
in regard to this case, are you conceding that the provision of 291E36 that states that there has to be a listing of all alcohol and drug enforcement contacts involving the respondent doesn't necessarily mean that merely listing it is enough? You would agree with
Your
that?
Honor, I think the statute requires just a listing of the prior alcohol enforcement contacts.
Okay, well, let's assume that there's a listing that's supplied that's not clear. From your point of view, it certainly would be part of the procedures employed during the hearing for the pro se defendant or pro se defendant's counsel to object that it's not clear, right? This is what I'm getting to. Is it your view that there at least is a point at which the pro se defendant can participate in questioning about whether this listing is putting them on notice about the nature of the charge or in this case, the nature of the sanction that's going to be imposed and the evidence supporting it?
Your Honor, yes, they could have objected at the hearing. But the objection here was not clearly made. The objection focused on a sworn statement issue. In fact, the hearing officer asked Mr. Walcott's attorney to clarify. He said, okay, let me see if I've gotten this correct. So the hearing officer tried to clarify this, and Mr. Walcott's attorney's answer was, it's not a sworn statement.
No, but did he tell him where the information came from? That didn't come in until after he issued his opinion that went to the district court. He didn't tell Mr. McPherson where it came from.
He didn't because the issue didn't come up, Your Honor. Had the issue come up, the hearing officer would have addressed it. And in fact, Your Honor, if what the court is objecting to is...
Isn't that what a sworn statement is? A sworn statement tells you where it came from or that it's authenticated in some way. That's what the sworn statement is for, authentication.
Your Honor, but the sworn statement is specifically required by provisions in the statute. It's a different issue, and it's addressed by McGrail. And this is not a sworn statement issue. This is a broader kind of general foundation issue, which was not addressed by Mr. Walcott's attorney.
He did say, I don't know how it was generated. I don't know how it got to this office. It is an official government document. Let me ask you that. Is it an official government document? What is this website?
It is a website run by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Okay, great. So, you know, you've been talking about how this is going to be this major administrative burden. They have to decide this right away. So, okay, I'm just looking at the facts here. The arrest was on April 14, 2014. A notice of administrative revocation was issued on August 20th, and there was a paper review, and then on August 21st, you sent a notice saying that his license is going to be revoked for 10 years, right? And then you say on August 24th, someone in the ADLRO office started doing things and sent things to his lawyer. Is that right?
On August 25th, the record was provided to Mr. Walcott.
Right. And because right after this August 21st decision, that saying you've got 10 years, you lose your license for 10 years, they must have requested a hearing, and then you somehow send him a notice of the hearing date, which would be the June after, June of 2015. What I'm having a lot of problems understanding is why you can't just provide a legend at the time after you do the review, you send the notice and say, this is how long your revocation is going to be. And if they request a hearing, and at the time you provide the discovery, why can't you provide a legend or something?
Your Honor, if the court wants to, ADLRO could provide something at the time the documents are produced. What I want to ask the court to do is to keep in mind the constraints that ADLRO is operating
to under. Add one sheet of paper is a constraint.
Yes, Your Honor, but I'm asking the court not to impose anything beyond that. If all the court wants is a very simple explanation of the sheet, and if all that's required, and ADLRO can still use the printout from the national database, then ADLRO may be able to live with that. It's anything beyond that, Your Honor, that I think you run into problems with the functioning of the system. If you require more, if you require procedures that ADLRO cannot satisfy in the 8 days, then they're not going to be able to use out-of-state convictions, and that's going to be flatly inconsistent with the statute. So I'm asking the court to look at the realities here. This is an administrative proceeding. The timeline is very, very short, and it's short to protect the drivers, honestly.
I still don't understand your shortness argument when I've just suggested, you know,
yes,
a legend with
the
discovery materials.
If
after the revocation there's a request for a hearing.
Yes, Your Honor. If the court requires further explanation, okay, but it can be put in the case file, and that will continue to allow ADLRO to use the printout from the national database. Okay, that probably won't affect the procedures too greatly. But if the court goes further than that and requires more, you know,
like what, having the like a sworn statement from the Oregon,
yes,
or something?
If the court starts requiring us to go to Oregon, get documents from Oregon, get testimony from Oregon, that is just not going to work. If
so
the court,
that's really a legitimate concern, that we're going to require somebody from Oregon to come to the proceeding, counsel?
Your Honor, I would like the court not to impose proceedings that are procedures that are similar to criminal proceedings. It's not required, and it would be overly burdensome. I think ADLR would not be able to satisfy those requirements if the court imposed them. But if the court keeps in mind that this is an administrative proceeding, that there are certain practical realities here, and if the only procedures the court imposes are ones that ADLR can meet within the 8 days, then ADLR may be able to do it. But I would ask the court to keep in mind that, you know, there are other things that the court can do. You know, if for instance, all the court requires is the hearing officer to state on the record that this is a printout from the PDPS system, the PDPS system is a national database, it's reliable, and
it's,
the ADLRO staff printed it out.
Before, we have said, we've recognized that driver's licenses are important, they're property interests, right? When you're taking someone's license away for 10 years, and we've also said that due process means process that's due under, basically under the circumstances. So wouldn't it be fair to give someone notice as to why it was 10 years? You know, why you said it was, they're going to lose their license for 10 years? I mean, I'm having a lot of difficulty understanding this reluctance to just provide some explanation along with the discovery materials.
Your Honor, if the court does require this, then certainly ADLRO will comply.
Because, you know, there are situations where the papers could be wrong. You know, people take other people's licenses. You know, I happen to have a friend whose younger twin brothers, one was a good guy and one was a bad guy, identical twins, and the bad guy would always say that he was the good guy. And the good guy had a lot of problems because, according to the police, he had a major record. Because his twin brother kept using. So why can't you give notice so if people are going to contest it, they have the basis of, you know, so they understand, oh, that's why they said 10 years. Oh, it's because they thought I had Oregon convictions And I actually didn't. It wasn't me. It was somebody, you know, I mean, so they can contest it. They can present the evidence at the time of the hearing.
Yes, Your Honor, they can contest the listing, regardless of the form. It's a separate case, actually, the Farmer case, Farmer versus Administrative Director. ADLRO cannot revoke somebody based on convictions that aren't actually valid. So the driver, if the situation you identified where there's a identity theft kind of situation, the driver can already challenge that.
But how is he, what we're trying to say is how did he know what he was supposed to challenge? I'm not saying that he didn't have these convictions, but I'm just saying how is a regular, as Mr. Partington says, how is a regular person supposed to know what this means if we can't figure it out?
Well, Your Honor, the evidence is there in the record. It was provided to Mr. Walcott's attorney. And at the hearing, again, if the issue is addressed, then the driver can challenge it, but it just wasn't addressed in this case. Your Honor, I see my time is up, and with that, I will conclude.
Thanks.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Mr. Partington, your vote.
I just have 1 minute, Your Honor. There was a prior form that was easily understood, so I don't understand how this creates a problem. They used to have a form that anyone could read. Now they don't. I find it hard to believe that people going to that website, that there's not a legend on it somewhere on that website to explain how to read these things.
Mr. Partington, how what happens to this case if we, you and Mr. McPherson admit to the two Hawaii prior contacts, but if we drop out the two Oregon, what's the status of this case? Do we remand for a hearing?
Well, you know, my position is that the legislation that was enacted provided that the district court may not remand. This court held in one of my cases that it may directly remand.
To ADLRO, we said.
Yes, and I submit this as an erroneous interpretation of the law. In the federal courts, the remand is to the lower court. And my view is that you should remand to the ICA, and the ICA should remand to the district court, and the district court cannot remand. But I think this court can set aside the 10-year, leaving the 4-year revocation. I mean, we're not challenging the 4-year revocation. We're challenging the 10-year revocation. And I think it's way too late to get an explanation at the hearing. You need to get the explanation at the time of discovery. There's no way to prepare a case if you're only going to find out at the hearing. And, of course, this case is much worse. We only found out after the hearing. That's all I have. Thank you so much.
Very well. Thank you to both our counsel for today. The court will take this matter under advisement.
Please rise. Ua ho'o manolo ia mai ne kea aha ho'o kolo kolo ki hana hana. This Honorable Supreme Court is now recessed.